Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So as the mindfulness bell diminishes, it takes us into the sacred silence, a silence that's always there. There is a sign in our classroom that says, silence is your perfume. And when I close my eyes and I feel that sacred silence within, I discover again that I'm free. When I'm not bound in thought patterns. And so we discover in life when we can be still, as the chant says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. So the silence holds the key. Jesus called it the peace that passeth all understanding. And so when we can take refuge in the sacred abode of peace, we are free. And so we notice the nature of the mind is twofold. There is that context of emptiness. And then there is the content of thought patterns, ideas, addictive thought patterns. But for this brief time, by simply ringing the bell, we've turned off the channel of the local mind, and we've descended into the wisdom of the awakened heart. And then we discover that sacred abode of love. God is love. And when we are loving, we are being God-like. And so we rest in that awareness of that nurturing place within. And then we feel how the soul is connected to the oversoul of life. We are all souls. Spirits having a human experience. And so the balancing act of those three components is our challenge, our opportunity, and our responsibility while we're here on planet Earth. Could we embrace this challenge with the beginner's mind? And then we hear Jesus again, be like a child if you would enter this kingdom of heaven. And so we invite the beginner's mind this Sunday morning, the part of us that is teachable, the part of us that is curious. How then shall I live this life, knowing that I shall die one day? But in the meantime, I am here to express, to reveal, and to live the life that this jubilant and beholden soul longs to express. As we live in that existential question, well, then that question begins to offer realization to us in a playful sort of way. So I invite you to invite your little child here this Sunday morning, the one who is curious, the one who can discover yet again a new way to embrace the moment. With creativity, spontaneity, a yearning to rediscover this connection to source, we enter into this dynamic experience with cheerful expectancy. And then we let the chips fall where they may. Take a deep integrating breath. Let go of what no longer serves you. With a sigh. And then open your eyes. And just stop and be here now. You realize life is just one big invitation to stop and to go within. I was reading Richard Rohr, and he says three words that will change your life. I am here. I am, is here. Now, we have this calligraphy that says, I have arrived, I am home. It's essentially the same thing. So when we know that the I am is what we are, and that it is in this present moment revealing itself, well, then, as we learned last week, it's not about you as the separate self. In this beautiful book, The Story of Gaia, this PhD in quantum mechanics from Oxford, England, says we move from the me realization into the we discovery, that we're all part of the one, into the all, that it is all that. When I did prayer this morning with my prayer partner in Vancouver, British Columbia, he was back on his little boat. He sold his apartment. He lives on a boat in the middle of nowhere, and he always starts his treatments by looking up at the sky. He calls it the big blue dome. And then he has his mind taking us out into the galaxies where we're part of everything. And then we say, and then now we come back to this little dot in the universe called the planet Earth. And yet you discover that within this little dot of planet Earth, there is a whole nother universe. When you look at nature that's all around us. So it's all part of the one revealing itself yet again, if we have but eyes to see and ears to hear. I told Tia one of the saddest moments of my life was when I was in Scotland, and we went to this museum, and they had a garden out back. And in that garden, they had the otters in a pond. But to their, they only had one otter left. And she was sitting on a little thing. And of course, I'm sitting there with tears coming down my eyes, because otters need other otters in order for them to fulfill their destiny. They are a social animal. And so I'm having my own tantric experience with that little otter, thinking of you, my otter back in the States. And, you know, they're all our otters. Just like I brought the little pug in today, he's all our pug. And I could have left him home all by himself, where he would howl in the bathroom, or I could bring him here and put him at the feet of my dear friend, and she'll put her toes on him and keep her toes warm and keep him. He's such a teacher for me. You know, I think I'm taking care of him, but he's really taking care of Trey and I and the family there through his sweetness, through his, he demands attention. You know, he'll be sitting in his little bed and he'll start to whimper or make a little sound, and he's wanting something. Oh, I should have brought you his little water bowl. Sometimes he just wants a little drink of water. Sometimes he just wants to be held. But what is so complicated about having a life form dependent on you? I have Napoleon, my koi, in the pond, and now he has little Josie. Thank God for Gigi and Raul brought a little baby koi to be with Napoleon. And every morning, oh, I forgot to do it when I came to church this morning because I left so early. I go out to the pond, and there he is. He knows that we have this connection and that I'm here to take care of him. Hank, and you have that same connection, don't you, Judy? I mean, you know when this is yours, and you tend it with love. Even though it's, you know, it's just a fish. You could say it's just a fish, and I love to eat fish. But yet, there is something about having a connection to a life force. Hi, come on in. Good to see you again. So, Richard Rohr, one of my heroes, he wrote a book called The Patterns of Creation. And he says there's one pattern that exists throughout creation, and that is the pattern of order. Then there is disorder, and then there is a reordering. So there is the status quo. You know, I was watching the news, and in Arizona in 1860, they had a law on the books that said abortion was illegal in 1860. Now they've reinstated that old law. So we have order going into disorder. I remember when they had the abortion mills in New York City when I lived there before Roe v. Wade became, you know, they would have back alley things. Then we had the Roe v. Wade. Women got all these rights. Now we've taken away the rights, and we're going back to an 1860 law. So that order, disorder, reordering, sometimes we go backwards. I'm looking at Iran and Israel now. What's going on over there? There is this chaos in the world. So can we meet the world on the world's terms and find some logical way to address it? So I pulled out Richard Rohr again. And he said in his lovely little book, Everything Belongs, he said, last week I spoke about it's time to wake up. Now what wakes up? Your higher self, your true nature wakes up. The part of you that doesn't get caught up in right and wrong, me and them, but the part of you, the knower within that knows. And where does that knower that's always been there that knows come from? It doesn't come from our memory. It comes from a deep well of existential realization. There's something within. Jesus called it the Gnostic awareness. He wrote the Gnostic Gospels. If you liberate that which is within you, he says, that which is within you will save you. If you do not liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will destroy you. Let those who have ears to hear hear. So what is that which is within you? What is this true nature, this true self, this God self that we all have right there? In the Sufi tradition, and Richard Rohr says, we are afraid of the mystics. He calls them the cheap religions will try to sustain that which is sick. The cheap religions, he was Catholic. Anyway, but he says, we're afraid of this mystical realization that says it's all one. Could we dive into that something that's greater? So let me give you a taste of this beautiful, enlightened teacher who, he's a contemplative monk. And the contemplative path is where you meet life on life's terms and see that the grace, the good, the God is in every single thing, especially the things that are transformational. He calls it liminal knowledge. When you're out at the edge, when you're at the edge of existence, that's when you're at that, where the chaos can become a new order. This is how we evolve. We have to get into a chaotic place. Anybody been in a chaotic place recently? And then out of that chaos comes a new order. Well, this is a pattern we have throughout existence. Seamus's beautiful workshop, which I heard about, was he had people reflect on what was their idea of themselves that was handed to you when you were a little kid. You know, your parents give you an idea of who they want you to be. And then we grow up until we say, but that isn't who I am. I'm something different. I want my hair to be purple. And I want to step out of the Baptist church for a change. Well, if you do that, you know what's going to happen to your little soul, young lady. Well, and then she moves here. Thank God. My child finally found me. Okay, he says this, Richard Rohr. Oh, he's such an amazing human being. Okay, we can start trusting ourselves finally because we are finally in touch with our true nature. With the true nature, the part of us that isn't bound by David Leonard, the true nature that says, I am that. In Sanskrit, they say, Tatwam Asi, thou art that. I am here, the I am of me is here. That's what we all are, is this I am. That's our true nature. So could we start with waking up? That's the first step. And then what happens? Everything belongs. He says, we have to allow ourselves to be drawn into sacred space and into liminality. Now, this center for me is sacred space. Every window has a yantra of the world religions. You can meditate on any one of those and achieve enlightenment. There are plants all around the center. Each one of them is radiating this tantric love. Some beautiful soul, I know not who, I thought it was my son Adam, did beautiful flowers up here for me this Sunday and some beautiful flowers in the other room. It's just an act of love. So what if when we come to this place, we are entering sacred space, and then Richard Rohr says, find that liminality. Now, liminality comes from the Latin word meaning threshold. That threshold where something is wanting to emerge, oftentimes out of chaos, because things kind of have to fall apart before they can reorder themselves. Remember that pattern. Anybody have a relationship fall apart? Well, then there was a reordering. Anybody lose their job? Well, then there was a reordering. Anybody get a new boyfriend? Well, then there's a reordering. I mean, just saying. We have to allow ourselves to be drawn into sacred space and liminality. All transformation takes place there, when you're riding the threshold of the moment, when you're not pulling back into what's conformity. Emerson says conformity and consistency are the hobgoblin of little minds and the divine of statesmen. He says, beware when the universe unleashes an original thinker. So he's saying get out on the edge of life. We have to move out of business as usual, says Richard Rohr, and remain on the threshold. There again, he says, limen, Latin word for threshold, where we are betwixt and between, Mr. Adam. There the old world is left behind, but we're not sure of our new one yet. We've stepped out of an old container that didn't serve us. Maybe you stepped out of a religion that didn't feed your soul, and now you find yourself in this universal truth that's based on no religion at all. Imagine no religion. I wonder if you can. There the old world is left behind, but we're not sure of our new one. That's a great space to be in. Get there often and stay as long as you can by whatever means possible. We need to stay teachable. We need to live in the beginner's mind. We do not need to be an expert on anything. He says, this is the realm where God can best get at us because we are out of the way. In sacred space, the old world is able to fall apart and the new world is able to be revealed. In that sacred space, we can find a relationship that makes sense at this stage of life. We can find a vocation or an avocation of the soul that makes sense at this time of life. Robert is such an inspiration for me because when his heart woke up, he moved into service. And whether you have the credentials or not, you're doing the work, my friend. You could wonder if I have the credentials to be up here as a minister. I mean, you know, I haven't been to seminary. I've just been on fire a time or two. Oh, there's my little sister. So good to see you. And I even brought Humphrey here, Susan. So Humphrey's up here for you. Oh, I knew that was one of his babysitters way back when. So Richard Rohr, he's taken us. Religion should lead us into that space and deconstruct the old normal world. Religion should take you out of this old normal way of thinking. You know, the old Bible verses. Oh, we were talking this morning about when they said Jesus was the son of a virgin, you know, the Virgin Mary. Well, virgin in those times meant young girl. It didn't mean what you and I think of virgin. So, but the languaging is so important when we think of what are we passing on to our heirs. Cheap religion, Richard Rohr, cheap religion teaches us how to live successfully in a sick system, Adam. How to live successfully in a sick system. Now, I'm not saying it's a sick system, Barbara, but it's a system that I evolved out of and I'm not going back into. The way things are must somehow be interrupted. The system, here's a Catholic priest, the system must be deconstructed, Raoul. And that is the job of a prophet. Now, he likens Jesus. He says Jesus was called the priest, the king, and the prophet. He says, forget the king, forget the priest, and let's pull out the prophet. Because Jesus was turning the tables in the temple. And that's what Richard Rohr is saying. The prophet leads us out of normalcy and dismisses it and debunks it. I find it's interesting that Jesus is called all three of those things. And the meanings of those roles are fascinating. He says, indeed, most religion is legitimating old-time religion. It is invoked for social control, for public order. It tells us it's okay to live in toxic and unjust environments, just as long as you have this personal relationship with Jesus inside that sick system. I mean, he's taken on his issues with the church, I think. Pope Paul VI said it well. There can never be personal conversion without also working for social transformation. So when you're living at that threshold, you have to be willing to speak truth to a system that adheres to old ways of thinking. You know, when I was at my twin sister's memorial service, Susan, and we were getting ready to spread her ashes, my niece's new husband, who is Catholic, he said, I'm a very spiritual man. He said to me, man shall not lie down with man, right before I'm ready to spread her ashes. And I said, you know, if you're going to start preaching from the scripture, you need to put it in context. Because the same place that says man shall not lie down with man, it says, and you shall not mix your fabrics. And if your wife or your daughter displease you, you can kill them. So when you put it in context, I think that old angry Jehovah is not the kind of God that I would worship. Isn't that right, Miss Terry? So anyway, he stormed off angry. And when she invited me to visit them in Alaska, I said, I don't think I'm going to go up there. Just saying. The way things are must somehow be interrupted. The system must be deconstructed, and that's the job of the prophet. I had to read that again. Both church and state are honestly threatened when you have a true mystic. Now, this is what I would consider myself as a mystic. A mystic is someone who knows oneness. When I became a brand new minister in 89, Dr. Stuart Grayson from the New York City Church, he was an elder minister, maybe my age, and he says, you know, David, this teaching is taught on three levels. There's the mental science level, where you change your thinking and you change your life and you can have a better existence. Then there's the religious science, which says there is a power greater than you are and you can use it. But even that, he says, goes against That's dualistic. The God is greater than you. He said we must ultimately evolve to the third level, which is the mystical realization that it's all the one in expression. One, one, one. If we teach anything, we teach oneness. So in oneness, to know the divinity within you, and that, to know that it's sitting next to you, it's sitting behind you, it's at Gigi's feet in the form of a little pug, there's no hierarchy in oneness. And then, when you come into the sanctuary and you see a little cockroach on the floor, you can squish it as a vermin on the planet Earth, or you can scoop it up, as I did this morning, and carry it out and release it to its greater glory. I mean, it's all how you choose to see things. So could we start seeing that our neighbor is ourself, to love your neighbor as yourself, that they are yourself? I have three compromised women living around. No, there's four. On my right, Miss Diane, she's had colon surgery, so she's having to learn to walk again. She says, I walk now like an old lady. I says, you do not. You're just a little slower. The lady across the street had a double mastectomy. She says, but at my age, I don't need the girls anymore. I said, that's a positive attitude. We'll go on with that. The lady down the street, her husband got killed in a boating accident, so she's grieving. And so I go over and bring Adam's flowers to her and hold her in my arms. She may be coming here someday. She's back in South America. And, you know, you realize that we're all in this together. We're walking each other home. And we're here to love one another in the simplest, sweetest ways. And there's no bad. It's all part of the good, isn't it, Robert? It's all part of the God. You know, everything belongs. And sometimes we go through these diminished periods, and they're sacred. So going on. Oh, I'm talking about this Sunday, chaos leading to a higher order. So I pulled Richard out because he talks about chaos in a very loving way, Miss Anastasia. He says, actually, this pattern of falling apart precedes every transition to a new level of faith. The old has to fall away for something new to emerge. If one is not prepared to live in that temporary chaos, oh, I don't like chaos, Miss Sylvia, it's too much chaotic. Have you ever cleaned out the garage and you know what has to happen first? Major chaos. And maybe we'll do that again someday, Adam. And then you put it back in order. So chaos precedes order. So he says, if one is not prepared to live in that temporary chaos, to hold the necessary anxiety that chaos entails, then one never moves to a deeper level of faith or prayer or relationships with God. You have to be willing to say okay to the chaos if you want that new order. Anybody can relate to that? Oh, good. A few of you can. Yeah, so when chaos starts happening, and you know what does spring mean for gardeners? Super chaos, isn't it, Sylvia? Oh, my God, my greenhouse window has all these little seedlings in there. And, I mean, I didn't mean to plant zucchini and cucumbers in the greenhouse window, but they're blooming in the greenhouse window. So I'm carrying down these cucumbers that are already climbing and trying to find a place to put them in the garden. Oh, and then I made the mistake of planting some, we peeled the potatoes, and you know, had those little spud things. I put them in a pot. Well, now all my potatoes are coming up in the middle of an amaryllis plant. So it's chaos. But they're all my children. So here we go, chaos. Whenever we're led out of normalcy and into sacred space, this would be sacred space, it's going to feel like suffering. Why would that be? Because it's a letting go of what we're used to. And that causes suffering. Well, I don't want to let go of what I'm used to. I'd like to hold my opinion strong. I'm very rigid in my thinking. You know, that's why I'm a conformist. No, a non-conformist. No. You got to really, sometimes we're wrong. Sometimes we need to say, hey, you know, I didn't figure it out the correct way. My mother had the strangest way of thinking about things. I remember she was a smoker. This was back in the 50s. And we would go shopping. And my mother was very much in people needed jobs. So she would take her ashtray and she would dump it in the parking lot and say, I'm giving somebody a job, Scott. I'm giving somebody a job. And I says, Mom, you're trashing the environment. I know, my mother was crazy like yours, Tia. I just, okay, Mom, if that's, you know, people have a strange way on this planet. Have you noticed? And then they want to project that onto you? No, 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 no. Okay, in letting go of what we're used to, that will cause suffering because we want to do things. And you know, if you always do things the way you've done, well, then you'll always get what you've always gotten. So in the second naivete, he talks, oh, this realm where everything belongs, this awareness now is called the second naivete. You begin to take life on life's terms. Yeah, this chaos is here so that a new order can happen. So instead of letting this chaos get me down and say, oh no, I've got to cling to the old, like the new CSL, I was just talking to my prayer partner, and they're trying to redo the bylaws. In the new CSL, they want to get rid of Ernest Holmes. Did you hear that, Sylvia?
No.
I know. So, but this is what happens when things, they try to evolve. They want us to become a socially active teaching where we're out in the world trying to turn over the tables. And I'm not a social activist. When I first came to Huntsville, there was this thing about, anyway, it was a hot issue. I think it was about women's rights, equal rights amendment. So I went up to the unity minister on the mountain, and she said, I've discovered not to get involved in hot issues with your congregation because it polarizes them. So I learned to step back from political activism or whatever, but now the organization is going in that direction to become, and you know, hey, things will evolve the way they need to, but I can hold to the integrity of where I am. So back to everything belongs. We're in this chaotic state. In the second naivete, the darkness and the light, oh, this is where we are. The darkness and the light coexist. You don't try to get rid of the darkness. You say, within the darkness, we find the light. By the way, satsang was wonderful on Wednesday. If you want to come to a beautiful evening between 6 and 7:30, because when the dark arises, it's met with love. And right there, inherent in the dark is the light. The second naivete says the darkness and the light coexist, and paradox is revealed. It's not a bad thing. And we are finally at home in the only world that ever existed. This is true knowing. Here, death is a part of life. Failure is a part of victory. Opposites collide and then unite because everything belongs. So we embrace the darkness within us. The little class we're doing next is called The Joy of True Meditation, where Jeff Foster says true meditation is meeting life on life's terms. And when little fearful Freddy shows up, you embrace little fearful Freddy. When the controlling Curtis shows up, you say, okay, Curtis, you don't need to control things out of fear. You can look at your controlling addiction. And that was my one addiction, was this idea that I had to be in control, until Llewellyn, my beautiful teacher, said, he thinks he has control. And then everybody laughed, and I realized, oh, that laughter was liberating me from the illusion that I'm in control. I have no control over any of you. I have no control over my pets. And I don't even have control over what I say on Sundays. Well, that's pretty obvious. So, going down here. Here, death is a part of life. Failure is a part of victory. Opposites collide and then unite because everything belongs. Teilhard de Chardin said this so clearly. There is nothing profane for those who have not learned how to see. That's the true seeing that we call contemplation. Could we learn to see life on life's terms? And then he talked about the difference, Richard Rohr, between the soul and spirit. He says spirit detaches. The spirit part of us detaches and observes and can observe the mind and can observe the emotions. That's the role of spirit. But the soul wants to engage. The soul wants to fully participate. And so when we start playing with these two invisible aspects of our being, there's energy and then there's essence. So what we are is essence, the essence of love, the essence of peace. Ryan has this beautiful essence of the creative genius. And then there's this energy that we meet in. That's the soul energy, where we know that we're connected. This is my soul animal. Oh, they had a thing on the news, and it was about, they were down in Antarctica, and there was a penguin, massive penguins on top of this iceberg. And there were like thousands of them. And it started with one. He did a nosedive and went down that thing into this water and a splash. Well, then what happened was the collective consciousness of the penguins started to leap off that cliff and they're going down. And I thought, these are my spirit animals and I have a fear of heights. No wonder I left the penguin world to become a human. I can't imagine leaping off that cliff and going down. Ugh, terrified me. Well, the penguin in me is trying to heal that. So, oh, the second naivete. Skip. Unfortunately, even if we have once seen, we lose our full vision repeatedly. Once we're awakened, we oftentimes fall back to sleep. We get mesmerized by the story, by the problem, and then we forget that awakened part of us. So it's hard to remain awake, he says, even after having once been awakened. That's why we keep going back to the well to wash out our eyes. That's why we come here on Sunday mornings. I was so thrilled at that satsang on Wednesday night. It was so much for my soul to drink from the well. And you know what happens in a satsang or a revealing service or here? We create that field. Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is this field. And when the soul lies down in this field, a field of awareness, a field of love, field of peace and acceptance, and we discovered last week that what we are is acceptance itself. So when we accept life itself, just the way life is, well, then we get to navigate. And Rumi says, I will meet you there in this field where each other does not exist. Well, what is that field, I wonder? Well, it's a field of love and light. It's a field of essence and energy. So let's see what he says about that. We need to refresh our seeing. The remaking of the soul and the refreshing of the eye is return to simplicity. It has to be done again and again and again. And somehow it feels like starting over each time. No wonder we speak of maintaining a beginner's mind. The beginner's mind just walked through the door. There she is. Always maintaining a beginner's mind. She thinks she's arrived, and then she gets back in another class, and she starts all over again. So could we court the beginner's mind? You know, when I became a minister, I think it was 1988, you get a little certificate, and it said, a minister is first and foremost a student of truth. I just stopped at that one. We have to be a student of truth, because we're always, truth unhides itself, no matter where you are on this spectrum. Barbara is still a student of truth. Every day when you wake up, it hides itself. The truth is that we're all connected to each other. The truth is that there's no hierarchy or lowerarchy. It's all the one unveiling itself endlessly anew, and we're in the dance of life. And then I had my epiphany on a dance floor when I was 25, when the choreographer said, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. So could we open to that place of discovery, just like spirit, we have to discover it, like dance? You know, the body knows how to express. It doesn't need. It's so funny, when I did my master's thesis in dance, I had all these professional ballet dancers. They couldn't do my dance because I asked them to express what they felt. And they said, you need to tell us what to do. I said, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm going to ask you to feel your soul expressing. I can't do that. You can't ask my soul to express. I can pirouette and touche and pivot, and that I can't. So then where do I think I found my dancer? Young John Stoddard, who'd never had a dance class. I put him in that circle, and I said, I want you to dance as if your soul has been liberated from a cage. Oh, he moved all over the place, expressed totally inappropriately, and it was wonderful. I got the highest rated thesis because I wasn't controlling it. I let go of it. So what if we could do that with life? That's that liminal place where you don't know, you don't have the answers. Somehow we have to allow the dissolution of our previous ways of experiencing reality. This often entails a certain amount of disillusionment, which is usually forced on us by, he's Catholic, by sin, failure, betrayal, and loss. What kind of things are forced on you by sin, Raoul? I never understood that word. For me, I created an acronym for sin, self-inflicted nonsense. It works for me. I was admonished to return to my own self and with you to guide me. I entered into the innermost part of myself, he says, and I was able to do this because I found that there was something within guiding me and assisting me, this presence that's always been there. But guess what? You have to go there to access it, this creative something that never went anywhere, Mary. It's been waiting for you your whole life. But it does require that we stop, that we go within, and we learn how to listen. So he's saying the same thing. And he says, with God as my helper, I could transform my sadness into strength and even joy. Problems, he says, are psychological in nature. But in fact, most solutions, if not all, are spiritual in nature. So therefore, we have to eventually move from trying to solve our problems, which is good and needed, into knowing that we cannot finally solve them at the level that matters. It's not about fixing problems. Maybe we can only forgive them, embrace them, and weep over them, and let them go. Anybody have something they need to let go and free themselves from? And then, boy, isn't it so simple. I didn't have to go out to have someone fix it. I just needed to get clear. Lastly, this movement from the psychological into the spiritual feels like a loss of power. It is, he says, it is for the ego self. But it is not for our true self. Your true self is so glad that you stopped trying to manipulate things. To succeed in the first half of life, we usually have to deny our shadow as unacceptable. But the burden of the second half of life is often the reclaiming of what we have denied, what we have feared, and what we have rejected. they may hold the key to a great order of awareness. Could we open to that new sense of life? That's what happened to me on that dance floor when they said all movement is discovered. I realized I needed to discover this thing that was within me. And that led me into my very first master's thesis, which was on the anatomy of inspiration. And it took me down a path of discovery. Mozart would hear the music in his head. And he'd say, I hear it, but if I don't get it down soon enough, it's gone. That we're all access. William Butler Yeats, when the inspiration comes, if I don't write it down, I'm sure Gigi's poetry is the same way. Well, then I lose it. But if you can capture that moment and listen to that something that is always available, but does require a stopping and going within. And then you realize, I'm 75 now, we're on the threshold of everything. I taught this class years ago, and it was one of, I think, the favorites the students ever had. It was called On the Brink of Everything by Parker Palmer. And Parker Palmer writes this book right before he's turning 80. And he had read a book from one of his students, and she said, I have a 15-year-old daughter now, and she lives on the brink of everything. And he was reading what this little 15-month-old child did. And he says, at almost 80, I'm on the brink of everything. So he decided to write one of his last books called On the Brink of Everything. That is that liminal place where we're always at that threshold of this new emerging life. No matter where you find yourself, at this age of 75, and he's at almost 80, I'm on the brink of everything. And here's how this beautiful man expresses. I love Parker Palmer. He says this, wholeness is the goal. And you hear Ernest Holmes who said, it's the perception of wholeness that's all healing. Could we see that there's wholeness inherent within even the most discordant thing? So he goes on to say at 80 years old, wholeness is the goal of life, but wholeness does not mean perfection. It means embracing brokenness as an integral part of life. Could we embrace our brokenness as an integral part of life? Wow, maybe that's where the light comes through. You know, in those broken places, the light can come through. Anybody been broken here a time or two? The sooner we understand this, the better, he says. It's a truth that can set us free to live well, to love well, and in the end, to die well, when we embrace the brokenness as well as the wholeness, because there's wholeness even in your broken places. Wow, isn't that beautiful? He says, I can think of a sadder way to die than with, I can't think of a sadder way to die than with the knowledge that I never showed up in the world as who I really was. I never brought my higher self to this plane of action. That would be the saddest thing, he says. I can't think of a more graced way to die than with the knowledge that I showed up here as my true self. As best that I knew how, that I was able to engage life freely and lovingly because I had become fierce with reality. I was no longer trying to be something that I wasn't. I was allowing myself to be perfectly, beautifully flawed, and in those flaws to find the sacredness in that. Isn't that glorious? To embrace all those parts of us that we might have shamed, that were unworthy. I love that little boy in me that was so inappropriate. Every time they would say, I remember as a little tiny boy, they would say, whatever you do, don't dance. And then what would I do, Serena? I'd get up there and dance in my diaper. And I just, would they say don't do it? I did it anyway, because my soul wouldn't take no for an answer. Richard Rohr, he wrote this little poem, The Wilderness Pilgrimage. He says, let these woods have their slow way with me. Patient pines that hold their green through all the frozen seasons. Lichen-covered rocks that live indifferent to time's passageways. These will teach me how to bring my life to earth. The fractal chaos of the forest floor, its white anemones, spiked grasses and dead leaves, the fallen trunks and the branches splayed out like pickup sticks. These will teach me how to live freely with abandonment and feed the roots of my new growth when my time has come to find that new. You know, when Sylvia was driving back and forth to North Carolina, she was overwhelmed by the beauty of nature. That's the same thing. He goes, as 80-year-old man, up to this remote place in Minnesota at the border of Canada, where nature is so primitive that he's having communion with the trees, with the lichen, with the birds. And it is his one pilgrimage where he communes with this something that we all are. Huh. So could we know that the chaos in nature is pointing to an order that's inherent within all of us, that when we embrace all the parts of us, and we're willing to have this deconstruction so we can have a reconstruction. It says in the Bible, die daily to be born again in this true nature. So what, and then be ruthlessly honest with yourself, what do I need to die to today? Could I die to the victim in me? The very first metaphysical message I heard 40 years ago was, there are no victims, there are only volunteers. So could I step off the platform as a victim of life and know that I co-create my life through what I choose to identify with? And if I'm identifying with surrender and with trust and with gratitude, well, it always works. I surrender to the grace of the moment. I trust that life will give me exactly what I need, even if it's uncomfortable. And then we let it unfold one breath at a time, one step at a time. And sometimes we're in that chaos place. Could chaos be okay? Because chaos is leading to a new order. So in this, the theme for this month is a whole new world. We're going to have a whole new world when we're first ready to wake up to who we are, and secondly, when we embrace the chaos as a doorway to this higher order. Now, chaos is uncomfortable, isn't it, Terry? You did 3 major moves in 3 days. I mean, it's uncomfortable, but then it opens the door to a whole new life. So I finally managed to get one whole container of cucumbers planted. I got those potatoes out in the garden. I don't know if they'll survive. The zucchini are also out in a pot. The zucchinis are finding their way down, and these little seedlings will find their way. If they live, they live. If they don't, they don't. And Adam is coming over to help me with the plants because they all require TLC. So will beloved Jan go and ring the bell, and I'll do a little... Thank you, Janet. We end where we begin. A simple ringing of the bell. A going within to meet ourselves. And then we smile. Knowing that we are energy. Knowing that we are essence. And knowing that we are encapsulated in an egoic mind with a physical body, both of which are temporary, but both of which... coexist in order for us to grow and evolve. So we open to this goal that Parker Palmer calls wholeness. And in this perception of wholeness, we observe where the brokenness may be. Maybe there's some grief that hangs out in our consciousness. Grief surely stops us when someone we love has transitioned. And we go within and we reassess, how am I going to relate to this soul now that is no longer in form? And as we listen with patience and true devotion and grief, we discover that the grief heals us, because the grief is not about losing somebody, but about knowing that the love was never lost. The love is still there. And so when I reflect on those that may have transitioned in my life, I realize that they're as close to me now, even in death, because our souls have a contract together. So as we begin to see life in fresh ways, well, then we're part of that reordering. We notice the chaos outside reminding us chaos is going to be there. It's going to be honking its horn. It's going to be screaming at us to take sides. But I loved what Tia said. Instead of letting the life drive us crazy, could life drive us into peace and wholeness? Because that's what it's doing to me. When the world gets crazy out there, I find that I withdraw into that place of peace within. I withdraw into that place of divine love that loves everything just as it is. Not that it should change, but that it should be what it is, and I can love it and accept it as it is. And so then we are in a relationship with the moment. My Zen calendar last week said, when you tend the creation, you're tending God. And when you tend the moment, you're tending eternity. And so as we tend this sacred moment now, together, know that we are tending eternity together, that we are eternal beings, and that the spirit that we are was never born and never dies. And that spiritual part of our being can detach from the craziness of the world, and yet at the soul level still stay engaged in a very meaningful, heartfelt way. We are the ones that we have been waiting for. And so now we embrace this life, this whole new world that we are creating, one breath at a time, by our willingness to open to change, knowing that we are safe. It's only change. With gratitude and playfulness, we embrace the next moment and let it unfold, saying, I am here. I am love. I am compassion. I am peace. I am that. And all there is that. How sweet it is. And life unfolds in surrender, trust, and gratitude as we take each other's hand and walk each other home again and again. Knowing all is well and all shall be well, we let this be so, and so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.